Mics are hot. Just like those frying pans. Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, mushroom lovers and tree huggers. My name is Jared, and with me is my foraging friend, Anna.
Hello.
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful you are here with us. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, we are at the Two Top discussing a double feature.
What?
First, we will discuss Morels, designed by Brent Povis. Artwork created by Vince Dorsey, Jarek Nakon, and Brent Povis, and published by Two Lantern Games.
Morels is a two-player hand management, open drafting set collection game, where players go on a journey through the woods to forage for the tasty mushroom treasures that lie in wait. They can be sought after day and night. Will you collect all the honey mushrooms you can find? Or maybe you'll try to snag the always delicious porcini? Or will you seek out the very rare and highly coveted morel mushrooms?
We will follow that up with Arboretum, designed by Dan Kassar, artwork created by Felipe Guerin, Chris Williams, and Beth Sobel, and published by Renegade Game Studios.
Arboretum is a 2-4 player hand management, set collection, and pattern building game where players build out garden paths for visitors to traverse in their arboretum. The game comes with a twist, as it's not enough just to have the best path on the table, but you also have to be able to earn the right to score those paths through cards left in your hand at the end of the game.
Will these games grow on us, or are we doomed to getting lost in the woods?
I'm lost in the woods.
Find out as we discuss. Doop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doo.
You just do it.
Do what?
Just keep going.
I like to have the pause to, now it's too long, it's ruined. But I like to go ahead and have the break so I don't have to add it later. It's fine. All right, Anna, you have been into foraging for years. What got you into the hobby? And what can you tell us, the listeners, about it?
Well, thank you for asking, Jared.
You're welcome.
That's actually the reason why we currently have the game Morels on our shelf, is because I am into foraging. And I was out in Seattle visiting some family a couple of years ago. And out on the West Coast, foraging is a little bit more common than it is where we live here in Nashville, Tennessee. And so there was this mushroom foraging game right there in this game shop that I just had to bring home with me. So, yeah, it was really fun. But I feel like I kind of grew up foraging for small things. So I remember going out into the backyard and knowing some little weeds here and there that were okay to eat, like dandelions, or we called it sourgrass. It's that one that kind of looks like a clover. And wild raspberries and blackberries and things like that. So I've always enjoyed that, but I got really into foraging over COVID, actually. You see, I am an extrovert and I enjoy doing things with people. And over COVID, I was not able to do things with people. So I needed something else to keep my mind occupied while I went on hikes and jogs and things that I always did with other people and was no longer allowed to do.
So when you can't hang out with people, you hang out with mushrooms.
I mean, why not? So, yes. And I guess I became more observant, too, because I wasn't talking to somebody while I was hiking and jogging and other things like that. I started to notice the plants and the things around me, and I got very interested in knowing what they were. So I joined a Facebook group. I bought a bunch of books, and I taught myself how to forage a little bit more effectively, specifically for mushrooms and along with it, a variety of other edible plants that I have brought into our house over the years. And I must say, my kids are getting into it too.
That's true.
I didn't even tell you this, Jared, but yesterday when we were watching the solar eclipse in Paducah, Faith was down at the Ohio River, kind of messing around, playing with driftwood, this and that, and came back with this whole handful of Whittier mushrooms.
Oh, no.
And she goes, Mom, look what I found. And I was just so proud that my 7-year-old daughter was foraging for mushrooms while we were waiting for the eclipse on the bank of the Ohio River. So, yep. There you go. 2-for-1 story time with Anna.
Wow.
Yep.
That's good because I don't have a story about foraging. Mm. It's not really.
I mean, we've been on hikes where we snagged some awesome ones.
Yeah, but that was still like your thing. I mean, I would not have stopped and picked any of them out of fear that I was picking something poisonous like your grandma does all the time.
You just text me pictures. That's what my grandma does.
But like, I feel like her hit rate of poisonous mushrooms is very high.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
So it is good that she seeks advice first.
Yeah, yeah. So you have no story of a time that you intentionally went outside to find something to eat or something edible?
I cannot recall a memory of that, no.
Wow, we need to open up your world, Jared. Well, I must say, though, to all of you listening, Jared is very supportive in that he has tried every single thing that I have brought home from my foraging time. And oh goodness, I probably bring home stuff at least every month or two, or it's regular.
Yeah, it's very regular. That's a good way of putting it. It's very regular. And I will say that as someone who didn't even really like mushrooms from the store growing up, some of it's okay. It's not, I mean, Anna does this weird thing where she like tries to disguise it as something else.
No. Some of them you're supposed to do that with, because some of them, like chicken of the woods, is supposed to go in place of chicken, or like lion's mane is supposed to go in place of crab.
I guess. I mean, it's not truly a substitute. Like, I would rather go kill a chicken and have chicken for dinner than to go forage for these mushrooms.
We have now found the line at which Jared will go outside to find something to eat.
That's right.
And it involves killing chickens.
I mean, I'm just saying, if you're going to make me do it, let's get the good stuff.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
All right. Let's talk about how to play Morels. So the goal of the game is to score the most points. Big shocker. Most competitive games do require that you score the most points. Most. To do so, you must cook sets of mushrooms that you have found. You can add various scoring modifiers like butter or syrup, or you might find a bonus mushroom looking through the night deck. With each set, you must also play a frying pan.
Plan your frying wisely.
Can't just go throwing mushrooms in the fire, Anna. That's not how you cook. Different mushrooms will be worth different amounts. Once the forest runs out of cards, or mushrooms, the game ends and players count up their points. Each player starts with one frying pan to start the game. There are 8 cards that sit in a line that creates the forest where players can collect the various daytime cards. And that's where most of the game lies, is in that daytime card deck. In this deck, there will be a variety of mushrooms, scoring modifier cards that all add a little pizzazz to your mushrooms, moon cards, which are the way that you can access the night deck, baskets, which increase your hand limit, and the blessed destroying angels. Remember when we talked about grandma picking up poison? That's what destroying angels are.
So poison.
So death. Each player also starts with a hand of 3 cards dealt from the day deck. Your hand limit starts at 7 cards. If you grab a basket, that will increase by 2. And you can have multiple baskets. You can have maybe 4 baskets. I don't really see how that works in real life, but that's okay. Not a big deal. On a player's turn, they have a few choices. You can take a card from the forest. If you do so, you're taking from one of the 2 cards on the far right end of the forest row. The other card is going to go into the decay. This will happen at the end of the round, no matter what action you take. A decay can add up to 4 cards, And that's going to be important because we're going to talk about the decay here next. So you have the choice, like I said, option one, of just taking one card from the forest. The second option is you could take all the cards from the decay. Now you might be saying, Jared, why would I not just do that? Well, a lot of times the decay is going to have Destroying Angels, and it's also going to have potentially more cards than you can put into your hand. There's only certain ways to get rid of your cards. It's not like in real life where you could just look at a mushroom, say, eh, it's not a good one, and then just chuck it back. Once you've taken it, you've committed.
No chucking mushrooms.
That's right. If you take a Destroying Angel, we'll go ahead and talk about that. It's disastrous. A Destroying Angel covers up each one of your already placed sets of mushrooms. You have to go down to a hand limit of four plus whatever baskets you have instead of seven until that Destroying Angel is out of your system. It is literally the worst. Do not take a Destroying Angel if you can help it. The next action is you can cook three or more like mushrooms. That's where you're taking the frying pan and your set and placing it down on the board. You have to place them all at the same time. You can't decide to place three now and then add some butter later and then add a fourth one after that. It's all got to be in one fell swoop. So you have to decide, should I clear up my hand and get these cards on the board to score points? Or do I hold out and get more? The next action is you could sell two or more like mushrooms. That's another way that you could get some cards out of your hand. It'll also give you some sticks, which allow you to work your way farther back towards the left in that forest track. And then last but not least, if you need to get one card out of your hand, you can play an empty pan onto the board in preparation of cooking something later on. Play will continue until there are no more cards in the forest row. Once that has been done, that is the end of the game, and everyone counts up their points. And again, the one with the most points wins. The mushrooms have different values. The honey mushroom is only going to be worth one per mushroom, but there's a bunch of them in the deck. So you could collect a big set of them before playing them down. Or you might go the other route. You might go for something like the porcellini or the morels. They are worth a lot more, but there's a lot less of them in the deck. And so you have to decide what you want to go for.
Would you like to say the word porcini instead of porcellini?
No, I prefer porcellini.
Okay, just checking.
All right, very good. Thank you for the correction.
I mean, if you said it right now, you could put it in later. So I was
saying, but this is funnier.
Okay.
So that is how you play Morel.
All right. Well, Jared, I have to ask the first question because we all know what the draw of this game is for me.
Yes.
Because I get to, you know, collect mushrooms, which yes. I like to do in real life and in my dreams and with my children and when I play board games.
Yes. Never enough foraging.
Also, the artwork is cartoon-like, but it is fairly accurate to what the mushrooms actually look like. So I would say it is also educational. I think the draw is quite obvious for me. What is the draw for you other than spending a nice night with your wife?
Are you kidding? You're taking away like the key thing?
Oh, is that your only draw?
Unbelievable.
Huh? Wow.
No, it's not my only draw, but it is a big draw. I remember you bringing this home and I saw the box and I listened to you describe it to me. And I was like, oh man, this is one of those things where they slap a theme on something and sell it in a gift shop. And it's like half of a game. And so I was very nervous the first time we brought it out. But I will say, I have been very impressed with the gameplay. For what it is, it's a very quick game, which is great. It's also a game that there's enough choice and decision making. But I also like the built-in push your luck mechanic of there's a morel right there. Do I take it and hope that it works out for me? Or do I go ahead and take the thing that's going to be a little bit more guaranteed, but not worth as many points? And there's a little bit of creativity because you have so many different options about how you handle the different situations and the way that the deck falls. So it is definitely way more than what I expected, which was just a card flipper, pick a card. Oh, cute. We got three mushrooms kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That was what I was afraid of. The artwork is very cool. I like the almost enchanted forest artsy style. I'm drawn in by that as well. And I like when games like this, where you're building your own thing, have enough player interaction that the other player affects what you're doing, but it's not in a screw you kind of way. Those are the draws for me. One other thing that I really like that I just thought of, the player aids in Morels, fantastic. On one side, it shows you all the cards in the deck and how many of each type. And on the other side, it gives a very clear, these are your options on your turn. This is how the turn's going to go, so on and so forth. And it's a nice, big-sized cheat sheet without getting in the way. So I really enjoy that as well. Outside of, like, living your dream, what do you like about this game?
Well, outside of living my dream, so thanks for taking away my biggest draw as well.
Oof.
Ooh, yeah. Uh-huh, it's payback there. So I like, well, I like the push your luck aspect of it. I like the idea that you can take the decay, but only up to a certain point. So the decay does go away when there's four in it. Yeah. And I like that. I mean, I read through the instructions, and so I got to see how mushroom themed all of the instructions were as well. So, for example, when the destroying angel works its way through your system, I mean, that's what you have to let a poisonous thing do, is you have to let it fully clear out of your system. Otherwise, it's going to make you throw up whatever you eat next. So there are some cute things like that. And the same thing with the decay is, you know, you can eat mushrooms after they've been sitting, but generally most mushrooms you don't want to eat past 3 or 4 days. Hence, the decay goes away after 4 cards. I also thought that there's several different ways to play it.
Yeah.
Again, it's not as straightforward as it sounds from just a let's slap a theme on a best of luck game and throw it out there, because there are certain, I guess, seasonings that you can put with your mushrooms. You can get butter, you can get apple cider, and you can cook your mushrooms in those, but you can't do those with just your minimum amount of 3 mushrooms. I think butter, you need 4, and apple cider, you need 5 in order to do that. So you can play a game where you really build around one type of mushroom and then stack a bunch of apple ciders on there, and that can be your game. Or you can play a game where you diversify and get lots of different kinds, and then, man, you can pick up the whole decay every single time because you've got all these different kinds of mushrooms, but you're not going to get some of those special add-ons. Same thing with the night cards. The night cards are completely random. You don't have any idea what you're drawing, but they're 2 of whatever type of mushroom you end up drawing in the night cards. So I think it's neat that there's several different strategies even within such a simplistic game.
Yeah, I would completely agree. I'd like to add in this moment, since you've mentioned it, my continued vast knowledge of this subject that I call the cider syrup. So that was good. Excellent.
When did you do that?
When I was describing the game.
Oh, I missed it.
Yep, that was me. All right, great. So things that I may not have liked as much about this game. Honestly, for what it is, I'm really happy with the game as a whole. I don't have a whole lot of complaints. I'm not even really that upset by things like random card draw and maybe not getting the exact thing that I want or things like that. I mean, it's a push your luck, you're going to have to see how it falls kind of game. So that's kind of what you're signing up for. I would say my big complaint, the rule book. To me, the rule book is wordy and it is not easy to navigate. I mean, it shows its age. This game came out in 2012. Rule books have really improved since then. But this game could use an update on the rule book, in my humble opinion. But outside of that, the only other thing, and again, this is more of a content related issue instead of the game itself. And I think this is probably something that gets corrected in the expansion that came out that we have not played, but I would like to get my hands on it someday. I do feel like it gets a little samey because there's only so many different things you can do with the mushrooms. I feel like I get to the midpoint of the game and I'm like, all right, come on, let's get through the crap to get to what I actually want to get to. Because you'll have times where the row in the forest, neither of us really want it because we're going after something else and we've only got a hand limit of so many. And if the shuffle works out a certain way, then you're kind of in this lull. But there's a lot of new things that get added with the expansion, so I think that fixes it. But in the base game, for me, I just feel like there's a little bit of a lull in the middle of the game because there's only so many different types of cards in the game.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'd say for me, something that the game is lacking is frying pans. I can never, ever get enough frying pans.
I think that's a user error.
Somehow Jared always has plenty of frying pans. I think he intentionally steals them from me so I can't cook any of the delicious mushrooms that I just found. But
no.
But I will say that's a thing. So like, for example, one of the games that we played, a lot of the frying pans came out at the beginning.
Yep.
And you've got to go ahead and get them because once things are gone, they're gone. And there's only a certain number of each type of card in the game. And so, you know, for example, if two Morels have already passed by, then it's probably not worth collecting them because there's only a certain number in the game. Same thing with frying pans. There's only a certain number in the game. And so you can get them, but then they can clog up your hand. And so that was something that happened in a game. But I mean, overall, I think you said most of it. I would agree that there's a little bit of a lull. I usually deal with that by deciding to go invest in some other kinds of mushrooms.
And I hold on to my frying pans.
And then never get frying pans for them. So it's probably not the best strategy, but there we go.
I mean, my win rate in this game is pretty high.
It is. It's so high.
All right. Well, let's keep moving because we do have another game to get to. So we've talked about some player interaction already. What about, does the game travel well?
I think so. The box is really compact and you can arrange. So you do need some sort of tabletop to play it on.
Yes.
You can't play it just like a card game at the park or something because you're going to need to have a flat surface to play it on. But in the rules, you can arrange it in a row. You can arrange it in a circle. There's ways to arrange it to where it'll fit in a small space. So I think it would travel pretty all right.
Yeah, I would agree. I could definitely see this being played at a restaurant or something like that. But I mean, the joke that from the original time we asked this question, it's not going on a tray table in the airplane.
That's the standard.
Never to be met again. But no, the box is small. You could throw it in a suitcase or a backpack and take it with you for sure. Price point on this, Anna, $27 on Amazon. It's not found a lot of different places, but Amazon still has it. So do you feel like you get good value for $27 for this game?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think the price has gone up in 2 years. I don't think I paid that much for it.
Well, it's one of those games I think that's on its way out. You know, so it's the struggle of a board game, right? Where
right.
It can only stay in print for so long. So I do think it's probably closer if you were to get this game in its prime, quote unquote. You're probably looking at more in the $15 to $20 range as far as what the market would demand. I think if you like mushrooms, $27 is fine. You're going to enjoy the theme. There's enough of a game there to enjoy it. I do think it's a little high for what you're getting, but again, for a game that's on its way out that might not get a reprint, it's not a bad buy. So with that, Anna, what grade are you giving it?
Oh, man, I'll give it a B+. I love the mushroom theme. I like the art. You've got complex aspects to a game that still is fairly simple, but this definitely isn't one that we pull out all the time. It's kind of a nostalgic, wouldn't it be fun to go collect mushrooms together type of game. So I don't really think it's your A+ big strategy game, but we really enjoy it.
I think I have to give this a solid C+. So
you always grade lower than me.
No, not always. I'm probably going to grade higher on the next one.
Probably, yes.
So I probably would never have played this game if you and I didn't play games together. I do enjoy playing games with you, and I enjoy playing this game with you, but I don't think I've ever been the one to be like, hey, let's pull this one off the shelf and play it. I mean, outside of like, I know this is what Anna wants to play, but I've never been like, oh, this is the one I want to play tonight.
Yeah, you pull it off the shelf because I say, hey, we haven't done mushroom collecting in a while.
That's right.
Then you pull it off the shelf.
I do something like that. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But again, it is way better than I ever expected it to be. There is a decent game in there. It does play quick. The artwork is cute. So with that, I would definitely give it a solid C+.
And for a game that has a specific theme, like if you were rating it against other games that have specific themes,
yeah,
I think you might score it higher because we have been let down several times by games that, oh man, we love that show or we love that whatever. And it's a letdown because the game rides on the theme and not on the strength of the game. There's a game in there as well.
Yes, I agree with that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back and discuss Arboretum. All right, Anna, you and I have both kind of, sort of, maybe been to an Arboretum. fortunately, we've been to two kind of, sort of, maybe Arboretums. So why don't you tell about yours first, and then I'll talk about mine.
Well, my first kind of sort of maybe arboretum, don't go looking it up because I don't know if they actually call themselves an arboretum, but it was the Botanical Research Garden that we went to in Kauai when we were on our honeymoon to Hawaii. So, yeah, there you go. I went to it.
Wow. What was your favorite part about it? Elaborate, please, slightly.
I assume at most arboretums and botanical research gardens, you've got a wide variety of different kinds of plants and you're going there to see the plants. But this one was really fun because they also specifically have plants there that they're doing research on and for. So we got to learn about some really cool herbs that they're studying for cancer treatments. We got to learn about how they were breeding different types of breadfruit trees to be more hardy and survive, because breadfruit's apparently a very incredibly healthy thing for people to eat. And yeah, so it was really neat just learning. I like to learn and seeing how plants could be used to be studied and to help people.
Nice. Yeah. So the one that I thought of was Cheekwood, which is right up the road from us in Green Hills. And they do identify as part of their grounds as an arboretum. So I guess that counts. I really enjoyed Cheekwood. I would describe it as a ritzy, like it's got a big old mansion on it. It's a big 1930s estate with like 60 acres or something like that.
Gorgeously landscaped.
Yeah, it's very gorgeously. Like you can walk around the gardens and Anna's stolen limes from there before. And what? We've gone through.
You can't have a record of me stealing limes from Cheekwood.
Oh, you did it.
Jared.
It's a very entertaining visit, to say the least. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. You can walk through the mansion if you want to. I kind of feel whatever about the mansion. But the grounds and the trees and the plants and the gardens and all that, very peaceful, very enjoyable. I really like going there. It's just a really peaceful place. I mean, I kind of imagine most arboretums are that way. So the way to play arboretum, in the box, there are 10 species of trees. They are all numbered 1 to 8. And depending on how many players you have determines how many different species that you play with. Everyone will start and end each turn with 7 cards in their hand. The goal of the game is to have the most points at the end of the game. You score points based on the paths that you put in front of you in your arboretum. However, you can only score paths if you earn the right to score those paths. On your turn, you will draw 2 cards. Play 1 card and discard a card. When you draw, you'll have the option of drawing off the top of the main deck or off the top of any player's discard pile. And you could draw from multiple piles if you want to. So you could draw 1 from the main and 1 from a discard pile, 2 off of 1 discard pile, 1 off of each discard pile, so on and so forth. After you've drawn, you get to play a card. The first time, you're just going to play a card down in front of you. But after that, you'll need to play either horizontally or vertically around the card that you played. And then from there, you can play horizontally or vertically around any card that you play. To discard, you can pick any card in your hand to discard, and it goes on the top of your discard pile. Play will go back and forth until someone draws the last card from the main deck, which triggers the end game. And I kind of skip straight to this because the most complicated part of this game is this whole earning the right to score. When the end game is triggered, that player will finish their turn, and then you're going to score points. We'll go to the score pad and we'll start with the oak trees. So Anna might have a row of oaks in front of her, and there's a variety of different ways to create rows. I'm not going to really get into that because it's hard to see, or it's hard to visualize without actually seeing it. That was super redundant. Incredible. Anyways, so let's say Anna's got a path of oaks in front of her. We will both pull out any oak cards that we have from our hand at the end of the game. If Anna wants to score her oak path, she has to have the highest amount of points tied to her oak cards still in her hand. So if she pulls out 2 oak cards that equal 9 points, and I pull out an oak card that equals 8 points, she has earned the right to score the oak path, and she is the only one that will be able to do that. Then you go through the other species of trees, and then you add up your total number of points. That determines who's the winner. So without going into too much detail, Anna, this can be played 2 to 4 players. I really enjoyed it too because it feels a little more tactical than it does at 3 and 4. I also like that this game is a little bit thinky and can really slow down with 3 or 4 players. And so that's why I picked it as a 2 top candidate. So I wanted to start with that. Other things that I really enjoy about this game, the artwork is wonderful. All these nature games really nail the artwork. It's a major part of what draws people into them. It makes the game kind of come alive and make you feel like you're in the middle of whatever you're doing. There's a lot of times that I'll be at the end and I'm like, man, I would love to walk through an arboretum like this. And so that's one of the main things that I really like. I also really enjoy the puzzle aspect of deciding when and where to put your cards in your arboretum. Because they're numbered 1 to 8, there's only so much room to put certain numbers. And so if I go ahead and commit to my 4 here and my 5 here, but then I want to jump to a 7 over here, well, I can't put a 6 in certain places now. And so I've got to work within that puzzle. But then I've also got to remember to hold certain cards back because at the end of the game, I'm going to be scoring certain paths. And I want to make sure that you are not scoring certain paths. And so it's a very much a lot of give and take in deciding how am I going to navigate this? And there's a variety of different ways to go about it. So those are some of the things that are the draw for me. What about for you?
I think the draw initially for me was, like you said, the artwork. I think that nature games are very fun, and oftentimes they give the opportunity to learn a little bit about nature. I will say one of the first things that I noticed about this game is how distinct they're able to make the trees. Mm. So, you know, you go outside in the summertime and to the untrained eye, many trees look the same.
They look like trees.
They all have, you know, branches and bark and then leaves, and they're all the same color. But this game manages to make all of their trees look different. And so without changing the type of tree and making it unrealistic, they're able to show the tree. So for example, the maple tree is shown in the fall, and so they make it orange because mm-hmm. maple trees turn orange in the fall. The cherry tree is shown obviously in the spring, and so it's pink, and so they cover it with cherry blossoms. And so each tree has a symbol that they associate with it that's also associated with the tree. And each tree has a different color, actually, even though they're all trees and you'd think that they should just all be green. So I thought that that was a really cool aspect of the game. And it makes your paths look beautiful when you get your arboretum all put together because you've got these gorgeous intertwining different colors of trees.
For sure. And I'll add on one more thing to the artwork. They do identify each tree by its actual species, and that's on the card. It's not in the way, but it definitely is there to help remind you. So you are having that educational piece of learning these different breeds of tree.
Right, yes. And so, you know, oh, hey, this is an oak tree, this is a maple tree, etc. I would say the other draw is, like you said, the puzzle aspect of it, because you've got cards in your hand and you're trying to figure out how to lay them down in this grid in front of you to make the most points for yourself. Any type of game like that, I enjoy, where I'm having to create this puzzle and this grid and take my resources and arrange them in just the ideal format. But it really adds an extra level of thinkiness to think, okay, I've also got to hold back certain cards in my hand in order to even be able to score the paths that I'm making at the end of the game. And it adds a level of player interaction, because if Jared has all of the cherry blossom trees, I can still have a play in that. If I hold some back in my hand, I can maybe take that scoring right away from him, even if I don't personally lay down any cherry blossom trees. So it definitely increases the player interaction more so maybe than other games where you're just kind of building your own little arrangement of things.
For sure. And that hand limit of 7, where you're always forced to have only 7 cards by the time your turn ends. I mean, there's times where you're looking at your hand and you're like, I don't want to play anything. I don't want to discard anything. And you're stuck in this decision of what do I do here? And I really like the tension that that gives. And then also the decision making of, you know, different ways of building your path determines different scoring modifiers. So if I'm only building out oak trees in my path, then I'm going to get more points than if I had mixed it in with cherry blossoms and other types. But I also have to get my other types out so that I'm not just holding on to it or giving it to you. So there's lots of decisions to make in this little game. And it was one of those things that it was another one of those that I was really surprised. I figured it was more of a game than I thought Morales would be, but I was pretty impressed with the decision making that's in here.
I'll say another aspect of strategy and thought provoking aspect of the game is that just because you have an idea of how your grid's going to play out, you've got to play it in the right order as well. Because like Jared said, you can only play horizontal or vertical to cards that have already been played. And so you've really got to plan for what you're going to start with. And then maybe you're not playing the last card in that path until the very, very end of the game. But that's because you've got to build down to the lower numbers and up to the higher numbers. And the game has a weird thing with the scoring between ones and eights where a one can beat an eight if they're both in people's hands.
Yep.
And so you might hold on to ones and eights until the end of the game. But then if you see one get discarded or if you see that the opponent has laid one down, then you could start playing those depending on your strategy. So there's a lot of thought into the order in which to play things too, which I didn't anticipate going into the game.
Yeah, and playing your ones and eights gives additional points too, which adds another give and take of, do I have to hold on to this to make sure that I have enough value to earn it? Or do I go ahead and go for those extra points? The other thing too, and you mentioned this, is the discard pile. You can't just discard a card and say, well, this is out of the game now, because anybody can go and pick that up.
Oh my goodness, yes. The last game Jared and I played, we played every single card in the game except for two cards, because the whole game we were picking up each other's discards piles, which actually added a very interesting aspect that I don't think would be found in all two-player games, but was in that one, in that we knew exactly what each other had in our hand because we knew where every single card in the game was because we just kept picking things out of the discard pile. And so, I mean, my discard pile was completely empty at the end of the game, meaning that even ones I discarded on turn one, somebody eventually came back and picked that up.
Right. And I only had like one or two. And I will say, having played this game several times, that has almost never happened, which really speaks to there's different styles and ways to play.
Yeah.
A lot of times I like to draw off the main deck because I like to do that rush game where I'm getting my points out, but I'm not having to manage it for longer. And so, the game ends when that main deck runs out. And so you want to get through it as quickly as possible. But just lots of different ways to play, which is really cool. Are there any things about the game that you don't like?
I'll say it was intimidating at first because, and I think we even had to go back and look up some things in the rules because of knowing how paths were formed and the scoring was confusing at first. And so it does feel a little bit intimidating where you feel like you've got to think for a while before your turn.
100%.
I want to make this path, but I don't want to discard something out of my hand that is the high scoring card that lets me score the path later, et cetera, et cetera. So it made it intimidating. I'd say we had to play it several times to feel more comfortable with the rules. I think the first time we were both definitely wishing we had done some things differently when we got to the end.
I don't want to say as simple, but as streamlined as this game is, explaining the card scoring system is extremely complicated. And it's just because it's a bit unique to what you would normally do. Normally, you'd want to create the best path and put that together the right way. But adding an extra layer is both very good and also a harder entry for new players.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something to be aware of.
And I don't know that people would expect that looking at the box because it's a very small box. All it has in it is a deck of cards. You're thinking, oh, this is going to be this sweet little nature game. And then you're hit with something that makes it a little bit more intimidating, a little bit more thinky, which I agree. I like that aspect of it, but I think you need to be aware of that when introducing it to new people and what type of people you introduce the game to.
Absolutely. There is some player interaction. You have to decide what you're going to affect on your opponent's board. Also, what you discard. We've mentioned all these things. But you're still playing your own little tableau. So it's a nice mix. It's what you and I really like as far as player interaction in a lot of ways. And so I think that's good. Do we think it travels well?
I think the box is small.
It is.
All it is a deck of cards. So if you needed even less space in a suitcase, you could take it out of the box and just put it in a Ziploc bag or something. But you are going to need a pretty big table space to create your large arrangements of trees. So again, couldn't play on the tray table on an airplane.
Still doesn't
You'd
do the
need
airplane.
An actual full-size table to play this game.
Yeah, you've got several, especially if you played with 3 and 4, you'd need quite a bit of space because it does, those arboretums do branch out. I didn't do that intentionally, but...
Accidental success is always Jared's proudest moment.
Hey-o.
Oh.
But no, I've brought this game on vacations before. It's one that we like to play, and it's something that easily fits in a suitcase or a backpack for sure. Price point. You can get this game on Game Nerds for 15 whole buckaroos.
Ooh, that's exactly what I was going to guess, because yep. You can't charge a whole ton more for a game that's just a deck of cards. All you're doing is printing. But yeah, I think that sounds great to me.
Yep. No, I completely agree. For $15, it's a great game. No complaints at all. There are no expansions to this game. It is what it is. And I think that's fine. It doesn't need much more. It's very nice and well contained. So Anna, with that, give us your grade.
Maybe you should go first this time.
Oh my goodness. I am going to give this game a solid B+. Teeters on an A, but most of the time it's a B+ for me. I have times where I actively want to pull it off the shelf. I'm not needing to wait for someone else to recommend it. It's one that I will often pull out to players who have just kind of gotten into the hobby a little bit. They've played a few games and they've gotten a taste, and I'm like, okay, let's take it up a sliver of a notch. And the only thing that really keeps it from a steady A for me is the fact that that one rule is so complicated for people to, it's not even really complicated. Like once you know it, you're like, okay, this makes sense. But it's a foreign concept for players to understand. And for the complexity of the game overall, it is an overly complex rule. So from that, it does kind of keep it in that B range. But I always enjoy this game when it comes out.
I think that I would also give it a B. And
for the record, not a B+.
For the record, just a B, yes.
Oh my, I have beaten you at a grade.
I don't think that that's how that works. But okay, you've assigned a higher grade than me. You haven't beaten me. Let's be clear now.
My apologies. Continue, please.
Yes. So I think a B for this game. I really think maybe if we played it more regularly than we do, I might score it higher. But I always feel like I'm missing. I still, when I play it, feel like, man, what could I have done better? I think, honestly, it might be because I have to keep cards in my hand. So I don't know that I would ever have this good feeling of success at the end of this game, because I'm seeing that I kept 2 more oak tree cards in my hand that I could have used to make an even longer path and an even more beautiful path, et cetera, et cetera. So when I'm doing kind of build your own kingdom, build your own grid type of games, I like to feel like I've gotten to at least part of my goal. And with this game, I can't ever feel like I've really made this beautiful thing, because I've had to keep stuff in my hand that would make it even more beautiful. So that's just what I'm saying. And I really do like it. I like the strategy, but I just get this kind of, I could have done more feeling every single time I play the game. I will say, because I didn't say earlier, that there are different strategies to do with this game, because you do score for the longest path, but you score extra if you have all the same kind of tree in that path, or if you start with a 1 or end with an 8. And so you could focus your game around creating just super long paths. All they have to do is start and end with the same tree, but they can have 16 cards in between if they want to.
Yeah, of different species.
Of different species, and then you get points for that path. Or you could have a path that's only 4 cards long, but it's all the same tree, and you're going to end up getting a decent amount of points for that one as well. And so I do like that there's different ways to play it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just has that feeling of not quite being completed every time I do play it.
And the modifiers for the shorter routes, if it's all the same, can be as much as your longer paths.
Yes.
Which is cool.
Yeah. And the last game we played, Jared and I had different strategies where I did all my paths the same kind of tree. So I was getting double points for every single path. And he did all of his paths where they're just different kinds of trees all winding all through. And
I had a couple, but
and
yes.
And our points were within, what, 2 points of each other? Our final scores were. So it was kind of interesting. It was drastically different strategies. One wasn't necessarily better than the other.
Sure.
And I like a game that you can play different strategies and they're competitive that way.
I completely agree. Well, Anna, I hope that you have enjoyed our double feature here tonight. And listener, I hope you also have enjoyed the double feature. I want to say thank you so much for listening this evening, whether you cut out early or if you're still listening. You are very much appreciated. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek. 5-star reviews, subscribing in your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, if that's your thing, and joining the conversation on Discord. These heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for our cover art and to Anna Snyder who made the music. Join us next week as Ian and I discuss the multi-level city building game, Acropolis. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Goodbye. And I hope this made you want to get outside a little bit, too.
Lost in the woods.
Just, yeah, drop breadcrumbs or something. Find a way back, you know.